evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza. This program is recorded via remote and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, April 13, 2020. Police arrest church leaders in Jonglei State Capital, Bor.
We are making sure the places that attract a lot of people should not be encouraged to continue, such as churches.
And South Sudanese civil society activists are asking the government to protect the police.
For the safety of drivers, traffic police officers, and other security personnel, the South Sudan Civil Society Forum recommends a suspension of checking driving licenses and logbooks until the emergency created by COVID-19 is officially eased by the national government.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in the Jonglei State Capital, Bor, arrested 10 church leaders Sunday for defying the government's directive suspending all religious gathering, including church services nationwide, to prevent the spread of the coronavirus. A Jonglei State official warned that any church leader found to be organizing religious gathering in violation of the government directives would be held accountable. Dengai Deng reports for VOA from Bor.
The South Sudan government announced several preventive measures to stop the spread of pandemics weeks ago, including banning all flights in and out of the country, a nighttime curfew, and a ban on all social and religious gatherings. Jonglei State officials say some religious leaders in Bor have ignored those guidelines. Jonglei State Acting Administrator Mabur Atim Mabur says pastors and bishops in Bor have continued to organize religious gathering. So last night, police arrested 10 church leaders.
We are making sure the places that attract a lot of people should not be encouraged to continue, such as churches and the carts, the dominant places, and even the drinking places be well. I know a lot of people will not be happy because this is already a culture that has developed, but we must discourage that.
Mabur says the government will not compromise on policies put in place to fight the spread of COVID-19. The arrested church leaders will be arraigned in court after police investigations are completed, according to Mabur. He says nobody is above the law and any priest who insist on organizing gatherings will be apprehended.
We have to hold on to our policies and policies about the curfew and about the coronavirus and what have you. We need to adapt to those, and in doing so, we are protecting lives and we're going to be okay if we continue doing that.
Speaking to South Sudan in Focus last Friday, Father John Abraham, the assistant parish priest at St. Paul Catholic Church in Bor, said the Catholic Church was encouraging Catholic faithful to adhere to preventive measures and celebrate Easter with their families at home.
We are concerned about the life of people. It is true. The church become a place of gathering, and this one of the rule that the country decide. No social gathering, no religious, because this is the way how the disease can spread. So we put it clear as a Catholic Church, in general in South Sudan. So all the masses will be only the priests and maybe few groups so that to keep the life of people safe.
Ask about the ban on church gatherings. The Archbishop of the Jonglei Internal Province of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, Ruben Akurdit Ngoang Akurdit, said religious leaders like him have no right to disperse a gathering of the faithful who want to worship. He declined to comment further. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
The South Sudan Civil Society Forum is asking the government of South Sudan to protect traffic police officers and other security personnel deployed on the streets and checkpoints from contracting the COVID-19. A police spokesman says the government has educated police on how to protect themselves from the virus, but admits that officers are not using protective gear. Ding Magot reports for VOA from Juba.
Civil society activists say they are concerned about the safety of traffic police who stop motorists and check drivers' licenses and car logbooks without wearing gloves or masks. Rajab Mohandis, executive director of the NGO Organization for Response Governance, who is also a member of the South Sudan Civil Society Forum, says such action increases the risk of contracting or transmitting the coronavirus.
For the safety of drivers, traffic police officers, and other security personnel, the South Sudan Civil Society Forum recommends a suspension of checking driving licenses and logbooks until the emergency created by COVID-19 is officially eased by the national government.
Activists say traffic police often stop drivers, bend over at a car window to talk to them without any protective gear, which puts their lives and the motorists' lives at risk of contracting the virus. Jame David Kolok, chairperson of the South Sudan Civil Society Forum, says that checking for driving licenses and logbooks is not a priority right now.
If there is need to check logbooks and confirm if there is any suspicion of issues relating to criminality, there should be sufficient provisions including either water and soap or sanitizers for the security officers and the traffic police to protect themselves against contracting or transmitting this COVID-19.
They say security forces on nighttime patrol are also at risk because they are usually crowded together in a pickup truck, often with no masks or hand sanitizers. National Police spokesperson Major General Daniel Justin says the Interior Minister has sensitized the police on how to protect themselves from COVID-19, but the government has yet to provide police with protective gear.
We have raised this to the high-level task force in regard to protection of our police personnel, because we are throughout we interact with the civilians, and we had a lot of things which expose the personnel into not being be affected by the coronavirus.
Justin says police were promised protective equipment from the government, but so far have only received some items from the UN Development Project. Mohandi says the government should be providing a substantial amount of money to fight against the spread of the virus.
The amount should be commensurate to the level of the response required, and that should be based on the tasks that need to be implemented.
The Civil Society Forum is calling on the South Sudanese to strictly adhere to the health guidelines issued by the Health Ministry, including frequent hand washing with soap, keeping 6 feet apart from others, and staying at home. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
Cameroon has required the wearing of face masks by all of its citizens and began large-scale production of chloroquine to treat COVID-19. The country says its hospital has already overwhelmed with more than 850 confirmed cases within 6 weeks, and it expects confirmed cases to rise into several thousands. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
Almost everyone on the streets of Yaounde began wearing masks Monday. Police were out to enforce the measure taken by the government to limit the spread of COVID-19. 22-year-old Christian Yubin, speaking via a messaging app, says the police forced him to buy and wear a mask.
Temperatures are very high, up to 35 degrees, and they are asking us to wear masks, which suffocates us. And I think the best thing to do is to respect social distance, stay far from people.
Dr. George Alain Etunimbala, Director of Pandemics and Epidemics at Cameroon's Public Health Ministry, says they are insisting on preventive measures because hospitals are already being overwhelmed by the number of COVID-infected persons.
On va libérer des listes, c'est-à-dire faire sortir des malades dans les hôpitaux qui n'ont pas besoin de traitement.
He says, with the ever-growing number of infected persons, the government has asked people who are feeling better in hospitals, including COVID-19 patients, to return to their homes, where they will have medical follow-up by hospital staff. He says the government is also transforming football stadiums and gymnasiums into facilities where COVID-19 infected persons will be received for treatment. Madeleine Chuente, Cameroon's Minister of Scientific Research and Innovation, says besides the obligatory wearing of masks, the government has ordered the production of the drug chloroquine to treat COVID-19 patients. She says they have started producing 6,000 tablets per day and expect to drastically increase production when they get some more ingredients from China.
Le gouvernement veut que avant que ça n'atteigne le pic, on puisse.
She says President Paul Biya has ordered them to produce at least 8 million tablets of chloroquine each day as the situation is getting worse. She says Cameroon has the know-how and laboratories to produce the chloroquine, but what they lack are the necessary active pharmaceutical ingredients they can import from China and India, and that China has assured Cameroon that the ingredients will be shipped in 2 weeks. Chloroquine is one of the oldest and best known anti-malarial drugs. It has also attracted attention over the past few decades as a potential antiviral agent. Last week, Cameroon announced that it had seized counterfeit chloroquine from at least 300 pharmacies and hospitals and closed 2 fake pharmaceutical companies as thousands of its citizens were rushing for the drug with unproven belief that it can stop COVID-19 infections. Emmanuel Anyangwe-Ngasa, a Cameroon-born medical doctor practicing in Germany, says U.S. President Donald Trump is leading many African countries to believe there is a cure for COVID-19 when scientists have not yet announced any. He spoke via a messaging app from Bonn.
What is the essence of that drug? Chloroquine has not been proven to treat COVID-19 successfully. It was unfortunate that Donald Trump took this thing up, spoke about it, and publicized it.
The rush for chloroquine as a treatment to COVID-19 began in Cameroon in March after France announced that half of 14 patients who underwent chloroquine therapy got better, and when U.S. President Donald Trump referred to it as a potential cure for the ravaging coronavirus disease. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, what is happening with the promised reforms in Sudan? Find out more after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you correct friends and loved ones?
I tell them the truth, because when I hide it, sometimes I have to tell them again and explain, which is not so fun. Yeah, it's easier for everyone.
You tell him what you have done is wrong. Next time, don't do like this, according to what he has done.
The first step I do actually is that I talk to the person, I sit back a little bit to be able to ascertain if it really went down with the person. To give the person a breathing space, just to ponder about whatever I said, and in the course of time too, I allow process to have its way.
When they go wrong, I call them aside and talk to them. I tell them their behavior is very bad, so they need to stay away from it. And some of them get angry, but I don't care.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1-202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1-202-630-8011.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Ethiopian health workers say COVID-19 travel restrictions in the country are forcing pregnant women to give birth at home. Simon Marks reports for VOA from Addis Ababa.
For Kanasa Kumara, receiving panicked phone calls from women going into labor has become an everyday occurrence. Ever since Ethiopia implemented strict travel bans last month to stop the spread of the coronavirus, the Mary Stopes International Maternity Center he manages in Adama, located roughly 100 kilometers from the capital, Addis Ababa, has received up to 10 calls a day from women unable to reach his center to give birth. The trend, he says, is of particular concern in poor areas with no ambulances and where traveling even small distances can be difficult. Kanasa spoke with VOA via a messaging app.
This morning, one client has called in need of an ambulance and told that she had two cesarean section before, and also she is appointed for cesarean section, but she has been suffering due to the shortage of means of transportation. So she asked for an ambulance. I am lately sent her. Now she is admitted, and the third cesarean section is safely conducted.
Kanasa said he was concerned that many other women have not been so lucky and are unable to arrange transportation. They are forced to give birth at home where medical emergencies cannot be treated.
Definitely there could be complications since there is no means of transportation and proper health service provision in the town. No doubt that the complication will happen.
Parliament on Friday approved a nationwide state of emergency, giving authorities sweeping powers to prevent the movement of people. Schools, bars, cultural restaurants, hairdressers and gyms were already closed. On March 23, the government issued orders to public transporters to cease overcrowding. The regions of Oromia, Amhara, Harare and Tigray have banned or restricted public transport to help limit the spread of the coronavirus. Ethiopia has recorded 65 cases. The Ethiopian Ministry of Health did not respond to questions on access to health services for pregnant women. Risha Hess, country director for Mary Stopes in Ethiopia, told VOA via a messaging app that people all over the country were no longer able to reach health services for delivery or postnatal care.
We're able to pick people up and bring them to the hospitals, and so far that's what we've done. If it continues, who knows if we have the, we only have one ambulance at every hospital. So there will likely be people who we can't get to either fast enough or, because we don't have the capacity. And I can only imagine what's happening with all the other maternity centers in the country and in those towns.
There are shortages of sexual and reproductive health products from India. There are shortages of sexual and reproductive health products from India because factories there have closed and the borders are shut. This, she said, could result in years of problems and backlogs due to the borders shutting down across the world. Simon Marks for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Two Sudanese analysts have blamed the transitional government of national unity for not doing enough to implement economic reforms 1 year after the ouster of former President Omar al-Bashir. One economic analyst says the transitional government has not recovered stolen funds from Bashir's loyalists. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Top military officers from the Sudan Armed Forces toppled Bashir on April 11th last year after months of mass protests across the country triggered by skyrocketing prices of fuel and bread. 1 year after Bashir's ouster, families of some protesters who were shot and killed during the months of street demonstrations are still seeking justice for their loved ones. Abdulmunem Himit, a Sudanese writer and a political analyst, says the transitional government has done very little in terms of dismantling elements of the previous administration. Speaking to this program via WhatsApp from Oman, Himit says the transitional government is too soft on Bashir loyalists.
Unless we are able to remove them and have real stability in all fields, the Islamists from time to time, they will be able to create instability and they may lead to existence of several problems, especially in peace and economics.
Himit applauds the transitional government for silencing the guns and respecting ceasefire declaration in Darfur, Blue Nile and southern Kordofan. He says some Sudanese now have the freedom to speak their minds on the various issues in the country.
The government has succeeded greatly in building international relations. It has succeeded in stopping war, let us say for a while time, to some extent succeeded in achieving or implementation of freedom of expressions.
Samah Salman works as an economic consultant at Hajar Development Group, a Khartoum-based non-profit. She says the transitional government has not fulfilled its pledge to reform the country's economy during the transitional period. Salman believes stolen Sudanese assets worth millions of dollars are stashed in banks outside the country. She says if the transitional government could recover only 10% of those assets, the country's economy would improve.
The Sudanese population is in a very severe economic situation, and the Sudanese are actually waiting for the Sudanese government to improve the economic situation through, you know, fiscal reform, economic restructuring.
Addressing the media over the weekend after a joint meeting with the military, the Forces for Freedom and Change and the Council of Ministers, Minister of Cabinet Affairs Omar Maniz said the government is committed to fulfill the aspirations of the Sudanese people.
We agreed to continue establishing transitional institutions and to form an economic emergency committee to manage the current economic situation in the country, and also how to do away with elements of the former regime and to do everything possible to fight the corona pandemic.
Manis says the transitional government will exert more effort to uproot Bashir's supporters, reform the military security institutions, and improve its relations with its allies around the world. Last week, Sudanese Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok urged Sudanese at home and abroad to contribute towards rebuilding the country's economy. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
More than 15,000 internal displaced persons sheltering at the Catholic Church in Wau have voluntarily returned home after South Sudan's unity government was formed in February. But some of the displaced persons in Wau say they want the government to provide security before returning to their villages. Viola Elias recently traveled to Wau and has this story for VOA from Juba.
Speaking in Arabic, IDP Rebecca Ilario says she would love to return to her village if the government would provide full security to protect the returnees in their homes.
I came from Nazareth after the conflict that broke out in 2016. Even now, I wanted to go back, but there is no house there. But if the state government is formed and there is peace, stability and security, I will be willing to go back even if there is no house. I can go and stay under a mango tree.
Ilario says she knows her life will never be the same as it was before the fighting broke out in Wau in 2016, but says she believes life in her village would be better than staying at the IDP camp. Kulita Martin, another IDP sheltering at the Wau Catholic Church, says she and her five children wants to go back home like their friends did who left the camp last month. Martin says she will leave the camp as soon as the unity government appoints governors and county commissioners who she believes will beef up security in their areas.
The problem is that when you are inside the camps and keep hearing that someone has been shot, someone has been robbed, someone's motorbike has been taken from him, all those stories scare me and make me to think there are still criminal activities taking places within the areas.
Martin is appealing to the non-governmental organization operating in Wau to help the IDPs return to their home. She says living in overcrowded IDP camps is not good for children, many of whom becomes disrespectful towards their parents. Speaking in Arabic, IDP Naima Jemis says women in the camps struggle to provide for their family needs, adding that there is no enough police protection for women.
There are areas without any police post and other areas with few police posts, but I still appreciate the police who still patrol at night. The government should pay closer attention to the police services so that they can continue to protect civilians in Wau.
Reverend Father Moses Peter Joseph, a priest responsible for the IDPs at the Wau Cathedral, says some of the internally displaced persons began to return to their homes at the beginning of the year. Reverend Moses says the latest assessment conducted in February by the International Organization for Migration found that nearly 16,000 people have returned to their homes. Speaking in Arabic, he says some IDPs will only return home when there is a complete restoration of peace and security in their villages.
The total number of IDPs here now are 2,919 people, and the next assessment will be carried out later this month. Even in other camps, the number has reduced as well. In 2018, few left the camp, but the majority of the IDPs have left after the signing of the peace deal.
Father Moses says some IDPs are leaving the camp this week and more plan to leave soon. In 2016, when the fighting broke out between government and the opposition forces in Western Bahr al-Ghazal state, Moses says more than 18,000 civilians from Wau and other neighboring counties sought shelter at the Catholic Church. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song New Sudan by Musa Juma. This one goes out to our Kenyan listeners in Juba and Nairobi.
Sana Africa,
We've been listening to Musa Juma with the song New Sudan. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for listening, and remember to stay at home, wash your hands with soap, keep social distance, and stay safe from the coronavirus. Join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
William, you're dear, my dear, son. Oh, yeah, you're dear, my dear.